Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
We're from the podcast Guide to the Unknown, where we only talk about scary stuff and have a good time doing it.
Come join the scary fun, everyone.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you'll find Guide to the Unknown.
Another mailbag, you guys.
Mailbag.
Right, we're back, ready to answer your mail. You guys keep sending it in. You've sent in your mails to the thisshowistrash@gmail.com address, and we are here to respond to them. You've even, some of you, gone that extra step because you've begged, I don't know how many stinking times.
Can I just say...
What?
I love you all so much for sending this mail.
Physical mail came in.
The two people that sent it?
Three people.
You know what?
Okay.
Other Ryan. Brian,
yeah,
if you will.
Brian.
B. Ryan.
Get out.
We have physical mail here to talk about, and that's what's the important thing, guys. So we are excited to dive in. We're just going to get straight to it. We got Ryan Mueller here with us, Ryan Farrell, Ryan Maddle of the Ribunal, and Clint.
Bonus.
He's here,
bonus.
Too.
Got bonus Clint.
Also. So we're going to start off with... We got a piece of mail. There wasn't a letter in here to read, but I want to talk about this. Mr. D.B. Mosley sent in, he wanted to find us, he had said, a replica of the actual gunship, the gunwing from Last Starfighter, and instead found this online, which is like a, I don't even know what these things are called, but it's like a
prism.
A prism, and it's got the Last Starfighter logo in it, and it's pretty nice looking. We got this, when you guys turn on, I think the first episode it'll be visible on is our upcoming Werewolves Within episode. You'll see it. It's going to be front and center on our desk, and it's awesome. Just want to say thanks to Mr. Mosley out there. Thanks, Dave.
So,
Prism Paper.
That is nice.
Dave, I didn't like the movie, but this thing is really sweet.
Well, there it you
is.
Go. See?
Yeah.
How much he likes mail. He can be a movie he hates, and you send him something, he's going to like it.
Yeah. I like it a lot, actually. That's it's cool. Really cool.
It's pretty cool.
It's awesome, man.
Yeah.
So thanks, brother. We got another letter here. This is from Rico the Mailman, who wrote us a letter previously.
Thanks, Rico.
He works for the Postal Service?
He is a mailman.
Yes,
literally.
He's a mailman.
And okay. On his envelope, he actually drew, he's actually a really good artist, and he drew a picture of the Mummer Man choking a Steven Seagal-headed chicken.
Oh, sweet.
On awesome. The back of it. And nice. So I gave that to Kurt, actually, and Kurt has that now.
He should do him dick punching him next time.
Nice.
All right, so here's what it says. Bad Movies Rule. Thank you so much for replying to my letters. Truly wonderful. Yes, I am all caught up. You guys have a terrific show. Keep up the reviews, the puns, and the outrageous explanations of scenes that don't make sense. I'm pretty sure you guys are not short in movie recommendations, but I'll give this a shot. How about another mini episode like Kung Fury going over for what is the only true sequel of a sequel, the 10-minute sequel masterpiece, Terminator 2 3D. It's on YouTube. Have any of you ever seen this before?
I did not know this existed.
No.
Even.
So is this like the Terminator 2 3D movie that they used to have at the theme park?
Yes.
Okay,
so
yeah.
I've seen it once.
Yeah.
Because for a long time, you could only see it if you went to Universal Studios.
Mm-hmm.
In Florida or Hollywood,
yep,
and you—it's like a 3D experience, and they've got literally dudes come on stage. I'd say it's more 4D because there was the screen element and actual actors there, that would come in and dude even rode in on a motorcycle and whatever. And it's the same actors.
You have no idea how much I hate the fact that you have the time to have watched and seen and know all of these movies. Carry on.
Yeah. So I only saw it because I went to the theme park, but apparently now you can see it on YouTube.
Oh, why not? You know?
And it is canon, apparently. He says, just taking a chance, just the same as the incredible Predator musical.
Something's out there.
Wow. That's good.
Something in them trees.
Which, again, I didn't even know such a work of art existed, thanks to you guys, except that, I'm going to skip that part because I don't want Clint to get mad again. Guess what? Remember how mad you got at him last time? He was mad about the Big Trouble in Little China thing.
That's whatever.
I re-listened to perhaps John Carpenter's second masterpiece, Big Trouble in Little China episode, and Clint, you never mentioned that it was good.
Yes, I did.
Nothing but I'm dumb, I suck, and useless words that came out of it.
Like, legitimately, if it is not in that episode, because yes. I did not listen to the episode because I was on it, if it's not in there, it's because James cut it out. But legitimately, he had a whole thing at the end where he's like, how could you possibly call this a good movie after this whole thing? It was a deal. It was a thing. It was recorded, and he cut it out if it's not there.
No, I wouldn't
have called it a good movie in the ratings at the end.
Now, it's all blurry because we've done so many movies, but I do have a vague recollection of
this.
And if it was your final rating, I would not have cut it out. Now you're going to make, Rico, now you're going to make me have to go back and listen to this episode again to see if it's out there and listen to the end of it. He does say They Live is number one, greatest documentary ever behind Idiocracy. So he loves They Live. Your favorite movie, Ryan?
Honestly, think I'd probably put Last Starfighter above They Live.
Wow.
That's insane. And I don't like Last Starfighter.
For you, that's a bold statement.
Yeah, that's quite a bold statement. That's a bold statement to call They Live John Carpenter's number one masterpiece as well.
Oh, yeah?
Halloween.
Halloween's not his best movie.
John Carpenter's Halloween from 78.
Yes, that's not his best movie.
It's absolutely his best.
It's movie. A good movie, but it's not his best movie.
What about John Carpenter?
Big Trouble in Little China is his best movie.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
What? Wait.
But Halloween's right there, right behind it.
No, it's definitely
right
John Carter.
Right behind it with a knife. Like, ready to die.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, right.
Because it's number one, and it kills.
John Carter.
John Carter. What?
That's a guy from Mars. He always confuses the two.
Well, there's John Carter of Mars. And then John Carpenter's Ghosts of Mars.
Oh.
That's even more confusing.
And Ghosts of Mars is also an underrated John Carpenter masterpiece.
Ghosts of Mars was a masterpiece. Wow, no one likes that movie.
Lauren, no one likes that movie.
Right? I just watched Halloween with Lauren this past week. I had seen it before, but I didn't remember it all, and she had never seen it.
Oh,
it's a good movie.
Halloween is a great movie.
It's way better than They Live.
Halloween is a master freaking piece.
Oh, it is.
Great.
I'm not a
incredible.
Okay, I'm just saying that I personally prefer Big Trouble in Little China.
Better than that. Yeah.
He says, I'm sadder that I have to wait now until Friday to get your new episode, because he was going through the backlog. But keep up the great work, Rico the Mailman.
Yeah, let me tell you something, Rico.
Yes.
I have gone into that, too, where I catch up to a show, and then I've got to wait. It's painful. I feel your pain, dude. It hurts.
Right? You're just like, come on, man. It's easier when I had 100-plus episodes to go through.
What am I going to do today? It's Tuesday.
Right? Back to the email. So we got Alex Olson writing in here. Hey, Alex.
What's up, Alex?
Say hi to Alex.
Hey, Alex.
Hi, BMR rock stars. He says, it's Alex. Love your show. Whoa. I'm an actor and currently working on a show in Wisconsin.
Let's go.
All right.
Ooh, hey, all right.
All right.
Hit us up, man.
On my days off, one of my absolute favorite things to do is to listen to your show. Some episodes are on repeat, of course. We can never get enough of Kurt's puns. Sorry, I don't know if he spells it with a C or a K. It's always a K. Always a K.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Wow.
I'm just joking.
Man.
I'm kidding.
It's a C.
That's why Mummer Man was his.
It's a
Mummer Man was a Kurt.
He changed his identity.
Yes.
In Mummer Man from Kurt with a C to Kurt with a K. And I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
You'll never know.
We got another email referencing after re-listening to the minisode of Predator the Musical.
Yes.
I heard you all say a patron came on the show, so it all just depends on the certain number. So no pressure, but honestly, say the number and I'll be glad and privileged to be on the show. I'm in Wisconsin only until early October. Well, we're
pushing it.
We're getting close.
Getting right there.
Please add Samurai Cop to your list. You'll hate me and thank me at the same time.
Nice. That's been brought up before. Samurai Cop.
That sounded familiar.
Yeah, so Matt Mulholland, I don't remember, honestly, brother Alex, what we said back when we did the Predator musical.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, long time ago. I know we had Matt Mulholland on the show one time for the Kung Fury episode. Yep. That just kind of happened to work out because Matt has been with us like since the beginning, and he was happened to be in town working a convention he does.
Yeah.
So that was. But hey, man, I appreciate you, brother, and I hope that the show that you're in looks like it runs to the beginning of October goes
what
well.
Is it?
Man, break
let
a leg.
Know.
Yes, hit somebody. No,
we need
we'll
more information.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, what's the project?
He says, all right. So Samurai Cop, I think, is already on our list.
It sounded familiar.
Yeah, sounds familiar. Yeah. He goes, not to mention Mortal Kombat Annihilation. That's on the list. Jaws: The Revenge, absolutely. On Deadly Ground, 100%. Ugh. That's a terrible Seagal movie. The Happening, Mark Wahlberg plays a scientist.
Oh, yes.
A science teacher.
Huh?
Yes.
Huh? What? It's
you love that movie?
It's M. Night Shyamalan's first R-rated movie.
He just fist pumped.
I love The Happening.
I do.
Oh, so bad.
Gosh, Brian, why would you damage your credibility like that? Why just
he
offering
had
that
credibility?
Information?
You know what? What's wrong with having a guilty pleasure?
You know what's happening right now?
I'll watch The Happening over The Sixth Sense.
Oh,
We've already seen The Sixth Sense. You don't need to watch it again.
That's what I'm saying. You don't need to watch it. You watch The Sixth Sense one time and it's like,
I disagree. I think there's repeatability in that.
You know what's happening right now?
What's up?
There's a transition that's occurring with me sitting here at the table with Ryan Farrell.
What's that?
Where the hate that the patrons have for me is transferring.
Transferring right now.
It's a transference.
In real time, transference.
Yeah. Yep, you can listen to it.
Because I like The Happening. Because
his credibility is being ruined, and it's making my credibility not look so bad.
Is an underrated.
Not so bad. It's not making it
underrated.
It doesn't make it better. It just doesn't look as bad.
An underrated throwback to a 1950s-esque movie.
I wanted to walk out of the theater watching that movie, dude.
Did you really?
Guys. Yeah.
With a beautiful score by James Newton Howard.
What? It's the trees, huh?
Yes,
what?
The trees did it. It was
always
trees.
Out of breath the entire movie.
And the trees stopped killing people once they realized that true love was possible.
Oh, jeez.
They should have stopped killing people once they realized that, hey, they convert oxygen into carbon dioxide. So
you're a murderous tree. What's that all about, huh?
Hold on, I'm Mark Wahlberg. I'm in this movie. Don't kill me, tree.
Mark Wahlberg.
He's trying to play a brainy professor, and it's like, bro, you got two brain cells, okay?
All right, he also wants The Wicker Man with Nick Cage and Steel with Shaq. Good Lord.
Oh, my.
Thanks again. You guys are phenomenal. We appreciate you, Alex.
I would do Steel with Shaq as well. That's
Oh, for real?
Ugh.
I don't trust anything you say now.
Ugh.
Yeah.
It's a bad movie. It's a really bad movie, but it's fun enough. Especially if you're a 90s kid. Come on. When Shaq was like trying to have a movie career.
He wasn't.
Are you sure?
I never saw any Shaq stuff. So
no?
Sorry.
Kazam?
Mm-mm.
Really?
I never even saw him play basketball.
Yeah.
I saw him miss some free throws.
Yeah. Or Taco Bell commercial.
Next email is from Craig Dalton. He says, good day, BMR team. One of the more contentious conversations in the world of movies has to be the topic of on-screen adaptations of books. Full disclosure, much of my life, I haven't been a big reader until somewhat recently, so my opinion on this is evolving. That being said, it's definitely a mixed bag when it comes to film adaptations. A huge success would be, obviously, Harry Potter. My wife and daughter are huge fans of both the books and the movies. I think something magical happens when a story you love comes to life on the big screen. Then there are the failures. One that will always frustrate me is Ready Player One.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I thought
really?
That, yes.
That was not a great movie from movie standpoints, but all the throwbacks in it were so much fun.
I love Ready Player One.
Have you read the book?
No.
No.
Go read the book. That's why you don't get it. Read the book, dude.
When there's a perfectly good movie right there to watch,
Clint's going to hurt himself.
Much better.
I just got glasses.
I'm talking to
you
too.
Wear out my eyes already?
Clint is not included in this conversation.
What do you mean he's not included? He's at the table.
He doesn't read good.
Because he needs to go to the Center for Children Who Can't Read Good.
And want to learn to do other things good too.
No, if you read the book, you would be like, okay, so like Princess Bride, great adaptation. I actually prefer the movie over the book. And that's rare, right? Ready Player One didn't capture the essence of it at all. Ender's Game, another example, did not capture it.
Well, he says, I saw a couple of friends who also had read the book and they were very excited. And a little more than 2 hours later, we're all like, WTF, what was that?
Yeah.
Filmmakers completely and needlessly ripped out the heart of the story.
Yep.
So here's the question from Craig, and you've already answered it to a little bit. What have been your most or least favorite movie adaptations of books that you have read? And what are some books that you would love to see made into a movie? So you just said to yourself, Ender's Game and Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Was Ender's Game not a good adaptation, or was
they didn't do as good a job as they could.
Okay, fair enough.
But Princess Bride, they nailed it.
How about for you guys? Are there any ones that you hate or love that have been adapted for?
You know, I would absolutely love to see Steven Spielberg make Ready Player Two.
Really?
Get out.
No, I'm just trying to start something with him.
All right, well, what's your own opinion on book adaptations?
I don't read.
He's never read a book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I haven't read much outside of school at all, and if they are, they're car setup guides and stuff like that.
You know what? I've read, like, willingly, Agatha Christie.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, to see a new adaptation of, and then there were none.
Yeah, dude.
I would love to see.
For sure.
Like, a straight adaptation of it, but, like, still set in the 30s. Okay. Not, like, a modern.
Don't do the, it's 2023.
Exactly. But, like, seeing, like, a straight, like, period piece of Agatha Christie's and then there were none. Right. I would love to see that.
Yeah, dude.
Fair enough. Other
than that, no, I don't really have a lot of movie book experience.
Mueller?
Green Mile. I think they did really well on.
Oh, yeah.
I read the book you know, the movie. I mean, the movie's like too, almost 3 hours, I think. So, when you start getting that length, you get a good, good chunk of the book, in that you're not changing out or truncating for movie length purposes. So.
Lord of the Rings.
I think Lord of the Rings. Sure. Yeah. That's a hard book to adapt to get it all in there. I think he did as good as he could have done.
Yeah.
And I think, if you want to find bad ones and good ones, you can go through Stephen King's pretty much entire
book. Sure.
I mean, they've been good and bad and all across the board. The two that immediately come to mind, when I was in seventh grade, the most important book that I've read that I've loved the most was It. It's talking about Stephen King.
All right. Mm-hmm.
I read that when I was in seventh grade. It was over 1,000 pages long.
Yeah.
And I loved it. And it turns out that right around, or just a couple of years before that, actually, the Tim Curry miniseries had come out on TV. And I wasn't allowed to watch it because I was only like 9 or 10 when it came out. And my parents were like, no. My mom was a huge Stephen King fan, so she had watched it. And I just caught a couple pieces like coming in and out of the living room. And it intrigued me enough that I was like, well, I'm going to read the book then. If they won't let me watch this, I'm going to read it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Right. And then I watched it, and I was so upset about how it adapted the book. And that's with a miniseries.
The Tim Curry.
The Tim Curry version.
The Tim Curry.
Yeah. That being said, in less time, because Andy Muschietti's ones that came out in 2017, I think, and 2019, chapter one and chapter two.
Right on the money there.
Were less time because the miniseries, like 6 hours long, this was probably combined 4 hours between the two. They had less time to work with, and I thought did a better job of adapting the original book of It by Stephen King. Neither of them have everything, but there are some things that shouldn't be adapted from those books, and they did the right job of picking and choosing what to get in and out. Because there's a lot of things that are very metaphysical about it that they couldn't have put on screen if they'd wanted to. Also, I will say this. Y'all ever see the movie Count of Monte Cristo?
Yeah.
Jim Caviezel.
Actually, there's another one that I've read the book and I've seen the movie.
Nice.
So I wrote a paper on that sophomore year of high school.
The book is long.
Yeah.
And in the book, his revenge plays out over years years.
Yes.
Now, in the movie, it's like in 4 days he's able to get back against him.
Right.
But they've also only got 2 hours to get all this in. Mm-hmm. So you have to forgive movies to a certain extent for that type of stuff. And it didn't bother me. I thought that was another fantastic adaptation of a book.
That was exactly what I had pinpointed in the paper that I wrote about it was that. And how the adaptation takes the essence of the book, and despite that it doesn't necessarily have that long drawn out timeline of revenge, it at least incorporates it all in some essence.
Right.
And it captures. And the movie in and of itself is a good movie.
In seventh grade, you wrote a book report about how it didn't match the movie?
Uh-huh.
He's a freak.
I read a 1,000-page book in seventh grade.
No, I get that.
He was seventh grade.
But your teacher was okay with you talking about the movie when you're supposed to have been reading the book.
It was a compare and contrast paper about the book versus the movie.
Got it.
Wow. Lucky. Yeah.
Well, write us in, guys. We want to know what are your favorite or least favorite book adaptations, ones that you're like, they just really hosed this one, or I hate this movie because I love the book. I want to hear from you guys about that stuff. Email the show. thisshowistrash@gmail.com. And thanks, Craig, for that awesome question, man. Next email comes from John Mady. He says, hey, guys, recent listener, I started listening earlier this summer on the recommendation of Bevan at the Loop Commons.
Let's go.
All right.
Which is the place we started off at, guys. That was our home for a while, for our studio.
Yeah.
And I have been enjoying new episodes and working my way through the back catalog. You have been making my commute so much better. He quotes the show, a kernel of corn in a diaper full of poop. who said that? I don't remember.
I think Bob
was
said
that a Bob?
It. I think like it was a Bobism.
That's a Bobism.
He said, when I heard that one, I had to pull over. I was laughing so hard. We made this man pull his car over to the side of the road.
That's awesome.
Anyway, here are a couple of my guilty pleasure movies to add to the list. The Hollywood Nights.
Yes.
You've seen it?
Yes, absolutely.
He said that all he says is an all-star cast before they were stars.
Yep. Absolutely. Okay. Good stuff.
What's it about?
High school-ish or just after high school, young kids, kind of a car club type of gang thingy.
Okay.
You know.
So it's a car movie.
Not exactly.
Okay.
But no, it's good. It's watch it. Go
worth
watch.
Watching.
Is it Hollywood Nights with an N or with a K?
It's with like
K.
Knights K. with like K. Knights of the Round Table. It's Tony Danza, Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, wow.
There's cars in it. It's not a car movie. Okay. I don't know. Right. Some people would argue it's car club movie.
Sure.
He's got used cars on here from 1980, which I already think is
also good.
Yeah, movie for
that
sure.
Was great stuff.
Yeah.
If somebody else could look up The Boatniks, this is from 1970. That's an old one for us.
Don't know that. that.
Starring Robert Morse, Stephanie Powers, and Phil Silvers.
The Boatniks.
The Boatniks. It's the boat with N-I-K-S at the end of it.
Hmm.
Who's got a synopsis for me? Anybody have that pulled up?
He's working on it.
Newly assigned to duty in the Coast Guard at Newport Beach, Ooh. A young ensign finds himself involved in romantic complications, as well as with jewel thieves.
Oh, dang.
Whose antics contribute to moments of hysteria and hilarity.
I have a comedy,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have a soft spot for movies with jewel thieves in them.
It's 5.5 on IMDb. Movies with jewel thieves are
automatically great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, man. We'll definitely get those added to the list. We appreciate you, John. And hey, thanks, Bevan. Another shout out to Bevan.
Yeah, thanks, Bevan.
For talking to people about the show. We appreciate you, man. All right. So this next one comes from Cyrano, like de Bergerac?
Never heard of her.
Cyrano 72.
That's exactly how it is.
Hi, guys. So my question for the mailbag is, what genre do you think produces the best bad movies?
Oh, that's tough. That's not hard. Comedy. Well,
not comedy.
No, you would think.
Yeah.
Comedies would be great, but it's so hard to comedy a comedy.
I mean, immediately you think horror movies.
Right? I was just going to say,
I think the trash action movies.
Trash action.
Drama, because people are trying to take it seriously, and they're just... Yeah. You know, overacting, or it just falls flat.
You just hate dramas.
That could be too.
Yeah.
What's your favorite drama?
I don't have one.
Yeah. The Green Mile.
Favorites. You know. Yeah. Look at Winners Take All. That's Winners a trash all. Action movie.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Look at Gymkhana as a trash action movie.
So that's what I thought of for a second. After I mean, my initial thought was horror, and then I thought. Martial arts movies specifically.
Yeah.
American Ninja, Jukata. Yeah.
When you've got the barrel of ninjas.
All that stuff.
Right.
I can't look at a barrel of
ninjas. The plane ones are good too, though.
Which ones?
The ones with planes, like the Air America.
Oh, yeah.
Any movie involving an airplane?
Well,
Iron Eagle.
That's a comic.
Iron Eagle, yeah.
The Iron Eagle movies. Airplane movies.
But again, those are.
Snakes on a plane?
Probably. It's,
you know,
Snakes on a Plane is trash action mixed with horror mixed with planes. Just covered them all.
It's hard because it's, I don't know if they tie into...
He's speechless.
He's thinking, yeah. No, but I don't know if they all tie into a single genre as much as it's like when you have a concept you're trying to run with that the person's never seen or heard of it before.
Yeah.
That's when you get the good stuff.
Well, what if I was to say to you guys and try to fill in this blank here for like, hey, all right, man, next week I need to have you on the show. We're doing this kind of movie. What would get you the most excited? Like, what kind of movie? Like, hey, we're doing a ninja movie. Hey, we're doing a horror movie. Hey, we're doing a stupid racing movie. Hey, we're doing, you know, a comic book movie, whatever. Like, what is it that you think, oh, this is going to be great?
You get me with a car movie, man. I'm here, but that's me.
Okay. There's been some bad car movies on the show.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, The Wraith is awesome.
A fantastic bad movie. No doubt it's a bad movie.
it was great.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And then Maximum Overdrive, that's a car movie.
I wish I was in that one.
We've done a few trucker movies.
Trucker movies.
Breaker.
Yeah.
Rolling Vengeance.
I think action movies probably the most.
Yeah, Van Damme movies.
Yes. Hands of Steel.
Yeah.
Right? Perfect.
Okay.
Robo-Jocks.
Yeah, Robo-Jocks.
80s action.
Sci-fi fight movie.
Unknown trope. Yeah, sci-fi, any sci-fi stuff. Sci-fi
anything
stuff.
Where it's like...
So we've named everything.
So except for comedy
and romantic comedy.
Yes.
If it was put on film.
That's okay.
Yeah. That's the genre.
Well, what's your answer? What do you think genre... What genre makes the best bad movie, Ryan?
I mean, I'd go with the trashy action or like the B-action type stories. Yeah. Right. Of
They could be ninja or sci-fi-ish.
Anything. Just with the joke... Like we were joking about Rubber, and it's like, give us a movie with like a cigar chomping overweight sheriff who's like, this tire's killing people, and he mounts up with a shotgun and a grenade launcher, and just goes and starts like blowing up tires in the desert. Like
Death Race 2000.
That
was a good one.
Any like kind of stupidly plotted B-action.
Stallone just pops her right in the face.
Well, I hope that answers your question. Go ahead. You got more?
I actually have the answer.
Oh, what's the answer?
Post-apocalyptic.
Oh, yeah. That's more at Hands of Steel is post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
And how many movies have we done that are at post-apocalyptic?
Solar Babies.
We definitely had a stretch there where it was everything.
We did.
Even Pair of the Roller Boys.
Pair of the Roller Boys was post-apocalyptic.
Right.
Escape from L.A.
Escape from L.A. Kind of.
Escape from L.A.
There you go. Maybe that is the answer. Cyborg.
Yeah. Yeah. They're it's all,
like,
dude.
But it's like post-apocalyptic with trashy action.
Right.
As opposed to post-apocalyptic drama.
Yeah. You know, post-apocalyptic crappy action is the perfect answer.
We need to make a post-apocalyptic comedy.
Escape from Burlington. We talked about it. Chris Cord already sent us down the line.
He already sent us the outline.
We have the story.
The outline for the screenplay is in the mailbag.
Throw it into ChatGPT and we'll see what it comes up with.
Oh, good Lord. All right. Next email comes from Carson Lutz. He says, to the makers of Bad Movies Rule, I must recommend this movie because I think it would be great for you to do. It is the third movie in the Evil Dead franchise. It did not make its budget back, which was mostly spent on the final battle.
Yeah.
Also, as a loyal listener, I must say that a love interest would be the trash can winner. I also just listened to The Last Starfighter. He's talking about Army of Darkness, I should say here, guys.
Yes.
Then he transitions here. I also just listened to The Last Starfighter episode, and I must say I am disappointed that you guys did not think of Arnold as Beta, because he would have just basically been the Terminator at that point.
Right.
Oh, man. That's a good point.
That's fair.
Could you imagine?
Shame on us.
Alex, what? Dang, you got huge.
Yeah. You got swole overnight, bro.
Listen, you're having a dream. Go back to sleep.
Should I stick my tongue in your ear now?
That's right. No, I should stick my tongue in your ear? I do not understand your mating rituals.
All of those other girls meant nothing to me.
Oh, I love it. P.S. Bob, how dare you say that about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie? 47 exclamation points. He is not happy that Bob did not like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Sorry. Nice. Carson will pass every one of those exclamation points on to Bob. Thank you.
There literally is 47.
That's what I'm saying, man. Bill Gertzen's back again. He said, look, I've heard you guys on multiple occasions mention that you should stop remaking good movies and remake bad movies instead.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
I've seen so many movies that had an awesome concept but failed due to poor execution. At best, those are movies you enjoy because they failed so badly at making a good movie, and at worst are so bad you regret ever having to watch them. So, though I would not say I've seen many movies I do feel that way about because I'm pretty easily entertained, after my last email, you know at least one movie I feel that way about. Now I'd like to hear from you all. What is at least one bad movie you would like to see remade with a better budget and more star power? I added that last thing on myself because we had just talked about that a little bit
ago. I say we do Big Trouble, Little China, no sandwiches.
No. Clint, I can't remake Big Trouble in Little China.
Exactly the same. Just redo his speeches without the sandwich. We're good.
All right. We'll start on the side. We'll do it for real.
Okay.
What are you guys thinking? What's a bad movie?
I'll tell you, I mentioned it before on the episode, but Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh, yeah. Great point.
If, like, Wes Anderson wanted to remake it. I mean, I would remake it. I think that'd be a fun movie to remake. But, like, Wes Anderson doing a remake of Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai?
Yeah.
That would be really cool. That would be incredible.
Would you have it be, like, 6 pages at the beginning for letting you know what's up?
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. It would be a whole, like, Black Hawk Down-esque.
Who just mail people a book the day before they plan to watch stuff.
Read this. You've got homework.
Do you have an answer?
It would be a quiz.
You know, I'm thinking Nothing But Trouble.
Nothing But Trouble.
Really?
I mean, it was crazy. I kind of enjoyed it and fun, but I think you could remake that one and do a little more with it.
Darker?
Yeah, I think so.
That'd be fun, man. Do you have a real answer this time, Clint?
No. I've thought about so many here as we're going through. I can't think of which would be a good one to actually do. But you look at like Gymkhata. You think about a Gymkhata movie or something that was actually fun to watch the way it is. You remake it and make it serious and it loses something.
Yeah,
I don't think that those would make good ones. And I keep going through my brain and every single one I look at and I think
if they remade with a big budget, The Wraith.
You got a
crazy new car.
Right, but is that the one I would want to waste my wish on? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's already, I dig it.
Awesome.
But it would be cool.
If there was only one for the wish.
And they didn't have they were so hamstrung on the budget, they had Charlie Sheen for a day.
Yeah.
And the suit is just basically a motorcycle suit with a helmet and braces on.
Some braces.
And you could do better effects than the glowing ball flying around or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it could be cool as hell.
Yeah, that could be a pretty bitching movie.
What about you? What do you think?
I was thinking Cyborg.
Cyborg.
I mean, Van Damme's getting up there, but he can still He can still do some.
You wouldn't recast it. You'd keep him in.
If you could keep it, him, that'd be
make him Fender.
Or just make it an older Cyborg.
But that shot, though, I mean, that's the whole problem. Is right. That shot? How do you not have Van Damme do that shot? That's
a good point. But imagine, like, one of the most endearing things about that movie is how much they did with so little.
Right.
It's true.
How much more could they do with 20 times, 100 times the budget?
Right.
Oh,
that's fair. Oh, what about Death Race 2000?
Perfect. They had no money. Yeah. Like nothing. Yeah. They were rolling cars down hills.
Yeah.
I got it. I have the correct answer.
What's that?
The Mummer Man.
I was going to say.
Could you imagine how much more enjoyable that movie would have been to make if you had $10 million budget?
We had more
because
than
you'd have money in your pocket.
Nothing that we had. Yeah. For sure.
$9 million. Did you have $900?
Solar Babies.
Yeah. I was just thinking that one.
Solar
when you said,
come on, man.
Growing ball. Yeah, Solar Babies.
Robot Jocks.
Robot Jocks with a budget would basically be Pacific Rim.
That's
But like, are these movies that like they were enjoyable as bad movies, right?
No, I think Robot Jocks had a good enough concept you could make it if you had actually good robot fighting stuff.
Yeah. Right.
All right.
And not like chainsaw penis coming down, you know, doing stuff.
Yeah,
right.
Because like with Buckaroo Banzai, like it's still enjoyable as a bad movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
But like Remo Williams, for example, could have been a better movie had they had like more stakes and more, you know, like technical craft to it.
That's right. True.
You know,
he says, look, I'll tell you before you tell me that, let me tell you the one I want to see remade. It's Shimmer from 2021. I'm not familiar with this movie.
Nope.
Mm. It's a mystery thriller about an unknown killer that turns everyone that is killed by them into a pile of gemstones, and a female forensic investigator is trying to find out who or what the killer is.
Well, okay, then.
It turns people into gems.
Was it a dragon?
Even though the acting isn't great, some scenes are laughably bad. You really want to know what is going on and see it through to the end, which isn't hard since the movie's only is under 80 minutes long.
Nice.
Ooh.
Nice.
It's not a good sign.
You know, he says, before you look it up, I've checked and it does meet your requirements. 50% tomato score and 5.7 on IMDb.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Interesting. He also said, P.S., I feel like there's a serious lack of love for Dudikoff on the show as of late. So here are two Michael Dudikoff movies I have for you to check out. River of Death and Cyberjack. I think River of Death's already on our list, but I'll make sure Cyberjack is if it's not.
Huh.
One is super boring, and the other is so bad it's good. I'll let you figure out which is which. Thanks, Bill.
So you get to watch both of them.
A guy.
Just drop it and leave.
Like I said, you could just do Platoon Leader with Dudikoff because that's
good too.
Ugh, man.
Look at this guy.
Is that what's that from?
That's from Cyberjack.
Cyberjack. That's the dude from. That's the guy from Tango and Cash and The Wrong Guys. Do you know what I'm talking about? The ponytail guy from Tango and Cash.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
All right. Next one comes in. This is from Jason Williams. He said, there are so many bad movies that rule. I've been catching up on all the episodes. Thank you for giving me a reason to rewatch all these old movies. Is it bad that I own most of these?
Yes. No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have a great suggestion for a bad movie that rules. 1992's Fortress, starring Christopher Lambert. You ever seen that one, Ryan?
I have not.
Oh, how about that, guys? He hasn't seen a movie.
Found the one he hasn't seen.
I haven't seen a lot of movies.
It's been hard to come by. I just saw that Tubi has it streaming for free. It is the definition of a bad movie that rules. He goes, my runner-up is Streets of Fire. That movie is bonkers.
Dude. Streets of Fire, Walter Hill?
Yes. All right.
Yes.
Well, he got excited about that when he almost jumped out of his chair.
Streets of Fire is awesome.
All right.
We just got done talking about things like Fortress. It's in a future private underground prison fortress. The inmates are computer controlled with CCTV, dream readers, and devices that can cause pain or death.
This is escape plan.
Wow.
Yeah.
They did that.
So there you go. We're checking boxes. We got dystopian future.
Perfect.
Dystopian prison movie. All
right. Right.
All
right. There you go.
It's like got the face-off boots.
Right.
It's like Riddick.
A couple more to get to, guys, and we're going to wrap it up for the mailbag. We got Daryl Pinter writing in. It's been a while since we've heard from Mike Pinter's better-looking brother.
Yeah?
So
is he better-looking?
That's what he says.
That's what he says.
Okay.
We have the information given to us.
We need pictures.
We've never had Mike Pinter dispute it.
No, never, ever.
Must be true.
Good morning, BMR crew. I've been playing a little catch-up on the podcast due to work, but you are all still killing it, man. A question popped into my head, and I was curious if I was the only one who does this. When I'm in my home office or doing a project inside my house, I usually need some type of background noise while I'm working. I've stayed away from podcasts as I save those for my driving. Music is always a go-to, but a lot of time I find myself putting on a movie in the background. Movie has to be one that I've seen so that I don't have to pay too much attention, and more times than not, it's a comedy. My go-to is usually something like Spaceballs or Dumb and Dumber, a movie that I know every one-liner is set up in advance and smile without even having to watch the screen. Am I the only one? And if not, what are your go-to background movies?
Interesting.
You're not the only one.
Okay.
I do this with the BBC Top Gear guys, but the originals.
Yeah.
And Grand Tour and stuff like that. I call them the Britiots.
I love those guys. Jeremy Clarkson.
Yeah.
James May.
Richard Hammond. Those guys in pretty much anything. Like if you go watch, there's one where Hammond is stranded on an island. James May has a cooking show where he can't cook.
Right.
Jeremy Clarkson's Farm.
Clarkson's Farm is great.
These things, like, legitimately background, fun, entertainment. Who the hell gave these guys money? excellent stuff just for passing it. That's what I put on in the background, not just the movie.
I love it. Dude, that's such a great answer. I love those guys. I don't even like cars that much,
yeah,
and I watch the crap out of them.
Yeah. I retain nothing that they say. But I think it's so fun to watch them.
Yes.
Yeah,
James is like, sure. What? Freight starter kit? What?
Yeah, right.
Four wheels.
He's given a review. I'm enthralled. I don't even know what he's talking about. Brake horsepower or whatever. Yeah.
My favorite actual review he ever did was the Ford Fiesta where he storms the beach.
Yeah.
He does a full-on review of this car in the most ridiculous situations ever. It's good stuff. Is it green? Yes.
Yes.
Very. Because it's actually green.
Go watch that. That's on YouTube if you haven't seen it yet. That's hilarious. All right. What's your background? Anybody else have background things they put on?
I usually just find something random that looks like it would qualify for our show on Tubi or something.
There you go.
Or not, or something that just looks decent, and then just let it play. And then if it gets really good, then I just stop what I'm doing and be like, this isn't important enough. Let me watch this.
Perfect. You guys?
I'm too OCD about my cinematic viewing experience.
That makes sense.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah. No, I can't do background.
Could possibly have a background.
That's how
background.
He got the B in front of his name.
Yeah, it depends what I'm doing.
Okay, Brian.
Yeah. Right. It depends what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Like at work, I'll have, if I'm doing something mindless, I'll put on like a podcast or I've put on movies occasionally. I typically don't with the movies. It'll be more podcasts or like talk radio or stuff. If it's something I have to concentrate on, I might have music on, but I don't typically do movies or like TV shows.
It's only when I'm cleaning, which isn't that often. Because if I'm editing the show, I spend a lot of time on my computer because I'm editing the show constantly, the video or the audio side of the show. And I used to try to listen to other things while I just can't. I cannot do it.
That makes sense.
I have to just listen while I'm editing the show. But if I'm like cleaning, I'm doing laundry, whatever, I usually actually am putting on like The Office, you know, some like rather than a movie. But I'll occasionally throw on a flick, and it's usually something like I'll throw a Tarantino movie on, you know, Pulp Fiction or
Once Upon a
Django
Time
or Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or something.
Any other eight ones that he did?
The other one. Right. You know. The nine masterpieces that he's made.
The eight
I'll put those on. That's what I usually go to. So hopefully that answers your question, Daryl.
I'll tell you want to know something to really like nerd out?
No.
I do listen to film scores.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So like the other day, I legit listened to the Batman Begins soundtrack as I did the dishes. See?
Perfect. And, I do that stuff all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll do film scores, just not actual films.
He does sign it as Daryl Pinter, the younger and much prettier, just kidding, younger and handsome, more handsome brother of Mike Pinter.
There you go.
He does recommend Problem Child from 1990, which is on the list.
Yeah. Yep.
Huge John Ritter fan, maybe one of the best pratfall comedians of my generation. Yeah, bro could take a fall for sure. Mm-hmm. It noises off. He falls all the way down the stairs. It's great. This was the one I loved as a kid and has not aged well. I haven't watched it in forever. Also, The Toy from 1982, Richard Pryor movie.
Oh, yeah.
Again, I cannot tell you how many times I've watched this when I was younger and still laugh thinking about it. Cannot believe it actually fits the criteria. Never saw The Toy. But it's like a rich kid. Like his father buys Richard Pryor for his kid or something like that, I think. I don't know. Like to be a toy.
Wow.
I know.
That wouldn't fly
now. Sounds really bad.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Buy me a clown, Dad.
This email comes from J.R. Christensen. And I'm reading this email because he also sent us some physical mail.
Mail.
Thank you so much.
He also put some freaking Velcro on this thing for Bob, which I love. On the envelope, it's Velcroed. And we can reuse it. And he put a little heart, and it says Bob next to it. I love it, dude. It's awesome. Thank you, J.R. Christensen. And inside this was a DVD copy of The Boyfriend School. And I thought to myself for a second, like, oh, well, this is nice and funny, but I'm sad that he spent money on this. And I get down to the bottom, and there is a plaque on the front of it, of the DVD case. It says The Boyfriend School, trash, like certified trash, 1990.
Yep.
And so now we have that proudly on display. You'll see it in a couple episodes coming up on the front of our table. So thank you, JR, for sending it. If you guys do want to send us physical mail, it's it's Bad Movies Rule, P.O. Box 383, Burlington, Wisconsin, 53105. Are you happy?
I'm so happy right now.
Three pieces.
It's the first time I've been in that we've actually gotten physical mail that I've been able to be part of it.
It's good stuff. He says, I hope you receive my donation to the Museum of Trash. I figured the cataloging of trash needs a physical presence, and at minimum, it is physical.
It absolutely does.
We appreciate that, buddy. He also was telling me how he got to go to a truck show, and he actually got to spend over the weekend some time at this tractor pulling event or truck monster truck slash tractor pulling event with Mike Welch, the guy from Rolling Vengeance.
Sweet. So
he's got him to sign his Blu-ray of it
That's awesome.
Of Mike Welch signing his Blu-ray of Rolling Vengeance.
That's awesome.
Cool. So heck yeah, man. That is fantastic. We appreciate you, buddy. And he said, although I didn't have a recommendation last time, I do want you guys to add the Dirt Bike Kid, which I think
Clint has already
talked about. So we think it's on there. Starring the guy, Peter Billingsley, from The Christmas Story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It looks pretty corny, dude.
It is. Absolutely. So,
it's Ralphie.
Cheesy kid stuff, baby.
It's Ralphie as a dirt bike
on a clapped out old jalopy beaten up on real dirt bikes.
He goes, it's corny. But at a time when your hopes and dreams are an 80cc dirt bike, this was the stuff.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I love it, dude.
It's a product of its environment.
It looks pretty bad.
I love it.
Yeah.
Hey, look, guys, join us on the next mail. We're going to have another mailbag here coming up very, very soon. Just want to say we have Eric Majorwitz has been working on some historical stuff for us for the show, and he's navigated through. And I do want to say he's done this where he's gone back through our old episodes, and he's pulling out what he considers to be some very noteworthy items from some of our episodes. All right, so Eric wrote in, and he's back again with some corrections, clarifications, collectible quotes, and haikus. I don't know if you remember this, but guys, Eric goes back. He's got to get it. It's awesome. All got to be C's.
That's awesome.
And helps us go back through some of these old episodes. And he says, I'm back. Thanks for reading my email last time. Again, this is all off the government clock. Wink, wink. Here's a pitch for a recurring segment with your mailbag episodes. The four C's. Corrections. Fix errors someone or Bob might have missed. Clarifications. Setting the record straight. Collectible quotes. And haikus. So for Constantine, clarification. And you were on Constantine.
Yeah.
Were you on it?
I was not.
No, that's okay. I can never remember.
It's Charles and...
clarification.
Wasn't it Bob?
For Eliza Cuthbert's hotness, James, air high five on Eliza Cuthbert. Besides 24, another good place to see her is in Netflix's The Ranch, co-starring Sam Elliott.
Oh.
Clarification, we asked the question, can girls serve as altar boys? Former altar boy, altar server. Female altar servers are permitted in all but two U.S. dioceses and are common in most English-speaking countries in Western Europe. So
they were not in ours.
A little bit, not in ours, not at all. But
you're one of the two.
Yeah, we're one of the two.
A correction. I must have called Tilda Swinton Irish. She was born in London but considers herself Scottish. So thanks you, Eric, for pointing out that.
Huh.
Sorry.
So she's anything but Welsh.
Anything but Welsh, yeah. Right. And he has some memorable quotes. Some of these I can't say, but Nicole, he did like when she said, sponsored by Tampax in the episode. and apparently when I said I'm a big Bush fan was another one for that.
Wow. That was out of context.
here's the IQ. Keanu film combos, Catholicism and comics. Forgive us, Father. Oh, very nice. Very nice. Breaker. Who was on that one?
Yeah,
I was here.
You were? Both of you.
Yeah.
Clarification. Does 10-100 mean you got to go pee? 10-100 does deal with going to the bathroom, but who knows? Here's a whole list, and he gives a whole list of other 10-4 good buddies here.
10-20's location.
We've also got here Iron Eagle 4 on the attack. Correction. Doug Masters was the first face transplant, was what we had said. According to Wikipedia, the world's first partial transplant was in France in 2005. And the first one was until 2010. So we got that wrong.
Our fault. I thought it was 97.
Well, yeah.
Nick Cage and John Travolta.
97 with John Travolta.
I thought it was 97 with Nick Cage and John Travolta.
Off. You know. Clint, you asked the question, how long does it take to fly from Georgia to Mexico? Well, it's a 28-hour drive. Or a little less than a 4-hour flight.
I was going to say, that's only got to be three hours.
28 hours is a lot more than they had time for.
Right,
that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
for sure. He says there is a clarification. There are 50 cal machine guns, but usually carried by a fire team, 3 to 4 people on that, not fired from the hip by an individual at a plane as it flies overhead.
60 cal, right?
60 cal.
60 is bigger. Okay. Yeah.
60 is bigger for sure.
Yeah.
Is it 60 cal in the movie?
I think it's a 50 cal in the movie.
I thought it was 60 because it was definitely above what like a normal, because 50 is like everyone understands that it's at least whatever.
The Iron Eagle 4 Chaiku is Doug Masters isn't dead. Inappropriate things with kids. Bored Chappie crumples.
All right.
Perfect.
We'll wrap this one up with the Vindicator. Clarification, when did they start to care about animals in movies? That must have been a question Ryan Matala asked.
I wasn't on that one.
Yeah, you probably were. According to Wikipedia.
No, I wasn't.
American Humane's first No Animals Were Harmed end credit was issued at the end of the movie The Doberman Gang. Since this was a Canadian film, all bets are off on Vindicator. Clarification, we said something was a Chevy Nova. I learned from my high school economics textbooks it said the vehicles did not sell well with Hispanic buyers due to the name of the car. Nova is no go. English.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
El Camino means the walk, so that's not that great either.
Not good either, dude. I love it. Last one, the Chaiku for Vindicator. Project Frankenstein, improve RoboCop ripoff. Needed more funding. Yeah, maybe this was the one.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's the one.
They pulled my funding for the thing. How dare they? That was the whole plot of the movie.
Yeah. Yep.
It's good stuff. Thanks, Eric, for all
the
work.
I think the movie needed more funding to be good. That one works on two levels.
It's good stuff. Well, thank you guys for writing in. If you have more that you want to send into the show, please do so. This show is trash@gmail.com. We will answer all of your questions. And if you got, like Eric, clarifications and corrections and stupid things that we said that you want to fix, please do that here in this space as well. Thank you again on behalf of everybody for listening to this mailbag. We'll catch you on the next one.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.